opportunity to discuss something that really came up a few weeks ago. I didn't get a chance to address it then, and I'm sure everyone's heard about it already a little bit. And that is that there was a, at least one, at this point there may be others, that in California, the California Rabbinical Council came out with this statement saying that many types of fish that we commonly eat could not be eaten because of the infestation of worms. They found the high levels of infestation of worms in certain types of commonly eaten fish, and as a result they said those fish can no longer be eaten. Well, the most talked about one currently is the salmon. We'll explain in a minute. The OU has not said that that's a problem, and we'll talk about why. So let's start with the pasuk, a few pasukim in this week's parsha, and we'll see. Again, this has already been going on for a few weeks, so the excitement maybe has died down somewhat. But for those that haven't really looked
it's
into it yet,
not quite at the same level as last year's suspicious statement concerning Streitzman.
Well, that's a different.
I'm surprised this rabbi isn't involved again.
This year they had their own. They had a different situation. Streitzman.
Oh, what was the problem?
Not the Hechsher. Let me do the Hechsher. One of the papers took out an ad. They advertised the matzah in a way that some found objectionable.
I didn't find it objectionable.
I found it a little bit inappropriate on one level. I'll tell you what it was. They had a picture. In any event, this week's parasha, this Torah portion, Parasha Shmini, in the book of Vayikra, Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11, there's a series of psukim here that talk about the signs by which we identify kosher and non-kosher animals. Right. So the Torah, as you'll notice on Shabbos, when you go through the parasha, we're already doing Shnayim Mikra, you may have noticed already, that the Torah goes through not only the signs of the fish, as we'll see in a minute, the Torah also goes through the signs for discerning kosher and non-kosher animals, right? The split hoof and the chewing of the cud and the chule. When it comes to over here, to Pasuk, we'll start first of all with Pasuk Tess. 11:9. Ezet tochlu mikol asher ba mayim, kol asher lo snapir v'kaskasas ba mayim, ba yamim uba nichalim, ba nichalim osam tochelu. It's page 598 in the stone Talmud, page 598, Leviticus, page 598. So the Torah says this: you can eat from everything that's in the water, everything that has fins and scales in the water, in the seas and in the streams. Those you may eat. All right, then the Torah goes on. Kol she ein lo snapir v'kaskasas
ba'mayim,
ba'yomim, ba'nechalim, mikol sheretz ha'mayim, mikol nefesh ha'chaya asher ba'mayim, sheketz ha'im lachem, v'sheketz yiyu lachem, mibesarom lo sochelu, v'es nivlosom tishaketzu. Kol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskasas ba'mayim, sheketz hu lachem. Then the Torah goes on to talk about the birds. But the basic idea here is that whatever doesn't have fins and scales, in all these various bodies of water, are basically considered prohibited, and they're considered what the art school translates as an abomination. Sheketz, abomination. You're not allowed to eat from it. And as I said, then the Torah goes on to talk about the birds. Okay. So that's the first series of psukim over here. Just jumping ahead for a second. Does everyone see that? Yeah? Okay, just jumping ahead for a second. So here again, we have the permissible and non-permissible fish. You need scales. You need fins. There's a couple of things that we just point out very quickly. The various questions in the halakhic literature as to what constitutes a scale. That's not for our discussion now. But not everything that looks like a scale is a scale. Certainly it has to be a scale that's recognizable. It can't be a scale that you need to see, that you need to use a microscope to see. That would not constitute a scale. They also have to be the type of scale that can come off easily, not the kind of scale that needs to be scraped off with a tool.
That would invalidate it?
Yeah. Not that you need a tool, but that if it's difficult to take off, and as if you have to, for example, when you pull off the scale, part of the flesh of the fish would come off. So you take a look over here, for example, at Rashi on that pasuk tas, elu klipim hakvum bo. These are the scales there, and that's all it says. But the Ramban says also it has to be a type of scale that could be easily removed. It can't be one that I think needs to remove flesh with it. As I said, this is not really our issue at the moment. But
that can be scraped off.
Again, it's not the issue for today, but just maybe worth mentioning tangentially that the Torah goes out of its way here to mention certain animals that have one simen as opposed to the other and only have that simen. So the famous Maamar Chazal asks, was Moshe a zoologist? You know, what was the Torah doing here? What was HaKadosh Baruch Hu seeking to accomplish, so to speak, in listing that these animals have one and not the other? What's the difference? Why are you telling me that? So Chazal said, it's to show you that there were these and no others. There were never going to be any other exceptions to the rule. And this is commonly used, this famous proof, one of the proofs for the veracity of the Torah. It's called the pig and fish proof. And basically, Isha Torah is written about it many, many times over. And the point being that if a man was going to write a book and try to pass it off as divine, he had to be very careful in writing something that he was confident wasn't going to be disproven. Right? If you're going to write something, you're going to go out on a limb, and then you're going to be disproven, the whole thing's going to fall apart. So to write, you know, thousands of years ago, there's never going to be an animal, other than these few exceptions, that have one simen as opposed to the other, and not both, you have to be pretty certain. That can only come from the Creator.
What's the deal with the fish?
Okay, C-A-I-N, Hempstead.
Okay, here's the Gemara, by the way. So this is the Gemara in the Chulin on Daf Samach Vav on the Beis. The Gemara says like this: Snapir v'kaskasas. So on this pasuk, Snapir v'kaskasas. Kol sheyesh lo kaskasas, yesh lo snapir. If it has kaskasas, then you know it has a snapir. It's not that you only need one; it's that you know it's there.
Yeah. So what does it say?
The sheyesh lo snapir ain't lo kaskasas. Oh, that's the Gemara. Yes, you want to ask your question?
Oh.
Just say the little boy snapir. Just say scales, and you don't need to tell me your friends. Amar Abahu Yagdil Torah V'Yadir. What exactly does that mean? What does that mean? Yagdil Torah V'Yadir. What exactly does that mean? So the Torah to me writes like this: Ratzal Amar Derech Torah Lichta Loshem Yosei Mevuror. Sometimes the Torah writes in a more precise way, in a more precise loshem. More clear way, could they lahadila ulahadira, to basically make sure shall yishayer shum safek v'chakir v'zeh. The nafkamina be'ikar kolzeh she'imotza chatichas dag she'estos kaskasas. This is a very halach lamaisa. If you find a piece of flesh of a fish meat that has the scales still attached to it. You don't have to go looking for the snapir. If you know that it has scales.
Uh-huh.
If you know it has scales, then you know it's from a kosher fish. But if you only found the fin, right, you can't assume the other way. You can't assume that it's kosher until you know that it also had scales. Okay? Alright, there's more to discuss about that, but for the purpose of our discussion, we're just going to move forward for a little bit. But that's
only when it lands?
Yeah.
That's from the roof.
Yeah, I know. Okay, thank you.
Okay, at the end of the parasha.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the answer.
The Gemara's answer is just to be very precise, to be very clear. You're right, maybe it would have been sufficient to say one. But Rabbi Avahu says, in order to lahagdil Torah lahadira, to make it beautiful and to make it clear and to make it precise. But then the Gemara goes on, or the Torah Tumim goes on to say that the nafkamina would be if you find a piece of fish that's already cut up. Very often you go to a place where they sell fish and it's already cut up, and now it has the scales on it. Let's say you go to a place like Costco. So that another simon would be the coloring of the fish meat. No non-kosher fish that has that red color. So if you see cut-up fish that has that red color, it can be assumed that it is salmon or another kosher fish. Take a look now, pasuk mem. V'ha'ochel miniv losa Yichabes begadav v'tamei al ha'orev v'hanoses nevlosa yichabes begadav v'tamei al ha'orev. Kol asheret ha'shoret al ha'oret sheket hu lo yochel. Lo, excuse me, lo yeyochel. If you have a sheret, something that's crawling, call a worm of some type.
Al ha'oret. Right?
Yeah. Just one thing at a time. It's considered again an abomination, and it's also the kol hasheretz hasheretz al ha'oretz sheketu lo yeyachem kol holich al gachon kol holich al arba ad kol marbe raglayim lechol hasheretz hasheretz al ha'oretz lo sochlum ki sheketim. Again, everything that creeps on its belly, everything that walks on four legs, up to those with numerous legs, among all the teeming things that team upon the earth, you may not eat them, for they are an abomination. You're not supposed to eat them. Again, the Torah warns, don't eat them, because if you eat them, you're going to make yourself in violation of this about the shaksu. It's a separate iser. You're not supposed to eat something that's disgusting. There's a minig that some had to eat the orla after bris milah. It's actually brought down in the early sources. Yeah, I can't tell you where it's practiced today, but it's practiced in enough places until recently enough that the recent post can discuss it.
I never heard that.
Rabbi Avadia has a lengthy discussion about whether it's usher or not because of Baal Tashaksu.
Because of what?
Baal Tashaksu. Yeah. It's disgusting. You're not supposed to do something that's disgusting. That makes yourself disgusting. We generally use that term to refer to someone who needs to go to the bathroom, needs to relieve himself, and holds himself in. He holds himself back. So he's in a state where he really should be going to the bathroom. He walks around not going to the bathroom. That's a violation of the Sisir Baal Tashaksu. But that's not the only time that one is in violation of Baal Tashaksu. If you do other things to make yourself in an unpleasant situation, unpleasant state of being, that's also the Sisir Baal Tashaksu. Okay, in any event, a little bit further here, is an interesting Rashi, and then we'll get into some of the halacha. The pasuk continues. Yeah.
I don't know. It's off time.
It's getting back to the parasha. So at the end of the parasha again, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us, Mem dalan ki ani anai lohechem v'hiskadishtem v'yisim kedoshim ki kadoshani v'lo sitamu es nashos hechem b'chol asheret haromeis al oret. Again, don't eat these shkotzim and remosim. It makes you it's an abomination. It makes you disgusting. Just tangentially, again, another halacha that comes out of this pasuk. A lot of halachas here. V'hiskadishtem v'yisim kedoshim. The Gemara says, Yiskadishtem is Mayim Mishonim, Visim Kedoshim, is Mayim Achronim. Not for now. Let me just, another discussion for another time. Just bear with me 1 second. Yeah, so it's actually, I think it's Gemara in Brachos. Pasuk Mem Dal. Yiskadishtem, Tanarabonim, Yiskadishtem, Visim Kedoshim, Odo Mekadish Atmo Ma'at. Yeah, next Gemara. This is Gemara in Brachos Nun Gimel and Beis. Viskadishtem Tanya. Viskadishtem Elamayim Mishonim. Visim Kedoshim Elamayim Achronim. Again, so two allusions to other halachas that we have. Kieni Adonai Hamale Aschem Eretz Yisrael Lios Lachem Leiluhim V'Yisim Kedoshim Ki Kadoshani. Right? You have to be holy because I took you out of Mitzrayim to make you a special and holy nation. Again, I am your God. Now look at Rashi, a very interesting Rashi. I don't really purport to have an full explanation of Rashi. It's Rashi, yeah, Rashi and Memhei. Rashi says the following. Ki ani Hashem hamale aschem, I took you out of Mitzrayim. Rashi says, Amanas shetekabu mitzvosai. And we actually say that at the Seder. We say, Ba'avor zeh. Hashem Baruch Hu took us out of the Mitzrayim, Ba'avor zeh. What's Pshat Ba'avor zeh? The Rishonim say, Ba'avor zeh. You're taking for the mitzvahs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, not for no reason, took us out to give us the Torah. So the Bible says a reference to the mitzvahs. Over here too, we're saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim to give us the mitzvahs. Amanas shetekablu mitzvosai ha'elisi aschem. Then he says, Dover Acher. Dover Acher, k'ani Hashem hamal aschem, b'kulan k'siv hotzeisi. It says, very often, it says, God says, I took you out of Mitzrayim for this purpose. Over here, it doesn't say I'm the God that took you out of Mitzrayim. It says I'm the God. That's right. I'm God that elevated you from Mitzrayim. What does that mean? The kankasiv hamale. The interesting Rashi. Tan de Rabbi Shmuel el mole lo halesi as Yisrael mi Mitzrayim el b'shvil she'ein mitamin b'shrotim kamo Mitzrayim v'kananim. And there's different nusach. Some Rashi's have a different nusach. It doesn't just say Mitzrayim Kenanim, it just says Kishar Umos. Dayim. Umal Yusahi Legabayu. Vizel Loshen Mala. It says this is a mile to Klal Yisrael. That they, unlike the other nations around them, they don't eat Shratzim. And that was one of the reasons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, according to Rashi, that I saw fit to take you out of Mitzrayim and to raise you up because you're this type of people. Again, obviously, you're this type of people because I gave you the Torah where I told you not to do it. So that's one difficulty in Rashi. But if nothing else, it's interesting to see this Maimar Chazal that really extols the virtue of being careful about not eating Shratzim. Right? Okay, so much so was the iser of eating shratzim considered something to stay away from that the Achronim spoke about it at great length. And before we see the halacha in Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch about the fish, which we started talking about, I just want to read a little bit of an excerpt from the Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash was one of the Achronim who wrote on the Shulchan Aruch, and he writes in the Siman where he talks about the problem of worms in the flesh of different animals. He writes the following. He's talking about a specific situation. And he writes, Komar Chizkiah, lo uchal hisapik, I can't hold myself back. Mi lehazir lehodiya la'am chomer isra hataloyim. I can't hold myself back, and it's a very long sif cotton. And basically, he's writing about how important it is to be careful with bugs. Lefisha nasa kal be'eni habrios, people don't take it seriously. Kevan sha'over odam avera, the shana ba nasis lokahatar. The Gemara says that if a person doesn't avera once, then he does it again. So the second time it becomes a lot easier, and we understand that the human psychology behind that, do it once is an initial hurdle to get over, right? That's how you guys brought up from. And then he decides he's going to be less observant. That first time, it's difficult. Whatever it is that you're going to stop doing, whatever he decides to breach, there's a certain difficulty in getting doing that. You know, whatever it is, call it your conscience, call it your Yetzer Tov, whatever it is, there's something pulling you back. Maybe deep down you know it's the wrong thing to do. But once you're shakua in it, once you're already been doing it, it's second nature, you're already, it's easier, much easier for you. That's what it means, not to look at there. Doesn't mean it's mutter. Doesn't mean nasa lokahetar. Some people make a joke. They say, oh, I did it twice, now it's mutter. Doesn't mean it's mutter. It's nasa lokahetar. Like, you view it already like it's mutter. The way you relate to it, it's not so hard anymore. Right? That first time the guy goes into the non-kosher restaurant to eat something, it's like he's looking around and he feels uncomfortable. And you know, the next time ready, it's second nature. And that's the way human nature is.
And the Chafetz Chaim was quoted as saying in this context that the third time, it's like a mitzvah. Right?
Like a mitzvah, right, yes, right. And this last one is like a mitzvah. So he says that as a result of this, he feels that he has to speak out against this. Ve'in ish sam alev, people, they don't take it to heart, literally, they don't take it to heart. Ve'dashu be'i rabbi megdolim, even very righteous people just tread on this prohibition. Afil chachamim v'yechidim einon is harm k'roi, alpina shmashin is bar b'shas, u'poskim, b'simin zeh, b'frat. He says that his heart is swelling within him, and he's very upset. He's mar ma'od marli mar behetet haloim shebegvina. He talks about certain worms in cheeses. Not our issue. I'm not really going to get into it, but that's what he's addressing. And at the end of this long discussion, very long discussion of that particular issue, he writes nimsa shekol ha'ochel taloim al nimolim. Person eats a worm or an ant. The kayotze chayev al kol tolas al nimola chamesh malkios. That's the Gemara in Makkos. That discusses for every sheretz they eat, you're chayiv five times over. Famous Rambam over there, what exactly, how exactly that works, that you're chayiv five different sets of malkus for one sheretz or one nemola. Ve'im hu zevuv, or yutush, chayiv shesh malkios. If it flies, then you're chayiv another set of malkios. Very complicated computation, exactly how that works, because generally we assume that you're doing one thing, it's one issue, you don't get double sets of malkus for one thing. Anyway, he says, because it's so severe, the Torah was marbelavin. Torah levied a lot of prohibitions against eating shratzim. Umalkios, and multiple sets of malkios. Leo shehu iser motzimod, because it's very common. Beperos, yirakos, kitnios, berov mini machalos, many types of foods, fruits. I mean, today, this is the type of thing that you apparently in pre-Chazal time, something you didn't hear about at all. Today, you almost hear about it all the time, right? Certain conscious organizations, they love to tell you about it. they can't eat this because of the bugs, they can't eat this because of the bugs. Now, this is a halacha. Certainly, you have to be careful about that. The rice is involved, no question about it. But the question is, what are the halachic boundaries? Where the isur begins and where it ends? V'yafshali zohar mi'dikal shabahem. It's almost impossible, he says, to be careful about them. In lo bezrizos gadol, unless you're careful, unless you know what you're doing. Fika chutzar chakasav lazaris biyoser ulaharbos lavin beisur shara ta'aretz me'ata kol adam yizdaris batmi kashal beisur zeh. People, be careful, because the Torah went to such great length to tell you how bad it is, and to tell you if you do it, it's an abomination and you're disgusting, and it's disgusting, and don't do it because I'm a kadosh baruch hu to get Mitzrayim, to make you a holy people, not to make you into a lowly people. You see how serious it is. V'gam lidrosh barabim chomer iser. You should also get up and talk about it in public. Ki hechi l'farshu mine. In order to keep them away from it, keep the people away from it. Vani asnafshi hitzalti, says, I feel like I saved myself by doing this. I feel like I did what I had to do. And yishma chacham v'yosef lekach, let the people hear and follow suit and do what they think is right. Okay, so you see, it's very serious. So what happened a month or two ago when in California they said you can't eat this whole long list of fish? If anyone wants to see the list, I'll try to bring it in. It's a long list of fish, including, as I said, many of the common types of fish.
In California?
Yeah. California Rabbinical Council. And there were others, I think, that sort of hopped onto it, but the OU has come out with a statement, as have many other conscious organizations, saying it's not true, and we stand by our position that these fish are still permissible to be eaten. What's the background? So I'll share with you a Gemara. The Gemara is in Chulin, and it's on Chulin Samach Zayin Amud Beis.
It would seem to be a simple scientific thing to determine whether it's true or not.
There are definitely worms. That's not debated. The question is, what type of worms are they?
Oh.
So I'm going to tell you now what the difference is. Who cares, a worm is a worm.
It's not quantity.
No. Well, there is an aspect of quantity when it comes to these things, and that's what's called nirlei naim. If something is not nirlei naim, if it's not something that can be seen by the eye, meaning it's there, but it's so small that you need a microscope to see it, halacha says it's not there. And that's not only over here. It's everywhere in halacha, pretty much, right? If there's a nick in the shechita knife, the shechita knife has to be smooth. So you know how you check a shechita knife? You run your thumbnail up this way, you run it up this way, you run it across the top. They actually used to put it on the ala bisra, ala tufra. People don't generally see them do that, but they would run it across. If you have to know what you're doing, if you don't know what you're doing, you know, they don't do it this way. But they put it over here and you feel for a nick. Now, let's say a guy takes... they do it on this. Like I said, you have to know how to do it. But let's say you take a microscope and you put the knife on the microscope. Of course, you're going to see that there's some irregularities in the knife. Halacha says, no, that's not the way we check. Same thing with esrog. How do you check an esrog? Do you have to take out a jeweler's loop and check the esrog to see if there's a spot there? People do that. It's not a joke. And I've seen people do that. You know, I used to see just pictures of people doing that. I've seen people do that. And you go to Yerushalayim, you go to Meir Sharim, you know, for the week before Sukkot, you see people, and I'm not, they want to be Mahadeh, that's certainly fine, but halacha doesn't require that you check for something. Same thing with the Sefer Torah. Every letter in the Sefer Torah has to be what's called mukach gvil. It has to be surrounded by parchment, and the letter itself has to be complete. It can't be any fissures in the letter.
Complete.
Now you look at it with the naked eye.
And not connected to
anything. Right, not connected, and can't be broken.
Right.
You look at the naked eye, it's going to look one way. You take a microscope, and you enlarge it, you're going to see all kinds of white coming through. Right? Magnify it 1,000 times over. Halacha says, no, that's not the way we don't check things like that. So same thing with the worms. If you take a cup of water and you magnify it enough times over, you're going to see all kinds of microorganisms. Shmokenu, microorganisms. Halacha says, that's not a sheretz. So even though when you're drinking water, and Chayadim says, even when you breathe in, when you take a deep breath, there's pathogens in the air, there's all kinds of microorganisms. That's not called trotzim. It's only what can be seen. So that was only one part of the equation. The other part of the equation was, now that we could see them, what kind of worms are they? So let me tell you what the Gemara says. It's a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara says like this, that Rav Sheshes made a statement that parasites are usur. Rashi says that what they're talking about are toloim shebekaved ushebereya, things that were apparently in the liver and in the lungs, right? I don't know exactly what type of parasites they were, but some parasites that were prevalent in those parts of the animal. So why were they, what's the first thing that Rosh Hashanah says? Those are also because they come from outside the animal. They come from outside the, right? Everyone knows, they used to think that meat generated maggots. Everyone knows today it's not true, that the maggots come from outside, they're attracted to the meat. Right? Spontaneous generation has been disproven.
Yes.
At least as of the 1700s. So everyone knows that meat doesn't produce parasites. Parasites are attracted to meat. They come up from the ground. Where do they come from? So Rashi says, one second, if they come from outside, then you should see them also other places in the animal. He said that you should see them in the...
I don't think that's true. Which, I think if you leave a piece of meat, like in the trunk of your car, it's going to have worms after a certain period of time.
It'll have worms.
And where'd they come from? From the eggs that are already there. I don't think it came from external places.
It's not coming from the meat. The meat's not producing. Yeah. It's not the decaying meat that's producing.
No, but there are...
Finally, in the 1700s, they figure out how they're going to disprove this theory. What they do, they stuck meat in a flask, and in one flask they put a lid, and one flask they didn't have a lid. And the one that had a lid, the maggots gathered outside the lid, and the other one, the maggots were there. So you saw they came from outside. It was attracted to the... Now, it could be in some cases that actually there's eggs in there. I don't know.
No, that's what I heard.
That's possible. It's possible. But I'm saying in many cases, it's simply they're attracted from outside. So Rav Shesha says, one second. I'm sorry, Rav Ashi says, one second. If they come from outside, you would see them elsewhere in the animal. I mean, he held that you would see them also in the, basically, in the anus of the animal. That's one sheet. That's one way the Gemara said. The Gemara says, then, others say is like this. That... Rav Shisha, now it wasn't Rav Shesha bar Rav Yidi, it was Rav Shisha bar Rav Yidi, who said that these things are mutter. These types of bugs, these kokinoi, they're mutter, because they're generated from within. They come from within the animal. If they come within the animal, meaning they're there from before, then they're really mutter. Rav Ashi said, one second, of course that's true. Of course if they come from within the animal, then they're mutter. Why? Because if they came from outside the animal, then you find them in the again, where the animal excretes. So what's the halacha? Says the Gemara in this first statement, halacha is that when it comes to these parasites, they are usur. Why? Because they might come in through the animal's nose while the animal's sleeping. They might come from outside and they might come into the animal while the animal's sleeping. It's coming in as a whole sheretz and it's going into the animal. All right. The Gemara says that's not good. What about maggots, which are found under the skin, worms, that are in the animal, perhaps from eggs that were there previously? So the Gemara says there that's also usur. When it comes to fish, that's mutter. When it comes to fish, it's mutter. Why? What's the difference? So the Gemara quotes Ravina, who said to his mother, "Let me eat the fish with the maggots, and I'll eat them." I mean, he was going to eat the fish together with the worms, knowing that the worms were in the fish. So the Gemara says, "Why? What's the difference?" So Gemara quotes, "Amar le Rav Masharshe Brei the Rav Achal Ravina Maishna." What's? Why is this an exception? Mehad Tanya, in this week's parasha, Es Nivosam Tishaketsu, that the carcasses will make you disgusting. That should include the maggots of the meat. So the Gemara says, but what about the ones in the fish? So the Gemara says like this. Interesting answer. They're different. Don't compare the fish to the meat. What's the difference? Behema b'shchita hu d'mishtaria v'hani midilo kamahani lehu shchita. Therefore, b'isurayhu kaiman. Aval dogim b'asifa ba'alma mishtari v'hani ki gavon b'heterika gavon. What does that mean? It means like this. That... The cattle, the basar, the bakar, they're usur until you shech them. The only way to make a cow mutter to be eaten, as long as it's not ben pakua, is through shechita. So therefore, until they're shechted, they're usur. Right? So the maggots, when you shech the animal, it's not like a ben pakua. Right? It doesn't become mutter with the shechita. So they're always usur. That's what the Gemara says. Those shrotzim that are inside the animal, inside the meat, you know, mad cow disease, whatever, something like that, you have bugs crawling around inside an animal, that's ulcer, because they're never matured by the shechita. That's not the way you matur sharets. You can't matur sharets that way. But fish, it's very interesting. Fish, why is a fish different? Fish doesn't require shechita. So something that's inside the fish, that lives inside the fish, is always permitted. Because the fish is always permitted. Right, fish. How do you get it? Make a fish mutter. You just take it out of the water. That's it. That's the mice of making the fish mutter. And therefore, the fish, the bugs rather, are more says are produced. They're produced, so to speak. They're generated in a mutter state.
I'm not allowed to eat a fish while it's alive, are you?
No, that's a separate thing. But there's no act of shechting. You just have to kill it. Just you see, they kill fish. It's not that pretty. Just whack over the head. Yeah. Anyone ever see that?
Yeah.
Machaneh, they have fish in these tanks. They people take them out. They put them in a plastic bag. And you guys wax the bag. Yeah. I mean, some things are not meant for the consumer to see. You know.
Why?
Well, the way it gets to your plate, it looks nice on your plate. That's sufficient. So some things are better not for us to see. That's my opinion. Okay. So what's the halacha? What's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch? And then we'll see what the whole tumult was. So the halacha comes down Shulchan Aruch and Siman Pei Dalad Sif Tei Zayin. Kol hatoloyim hanimsoyim bebehema, if it's found in the animal, bein sheim bein or lebasar, whether they're between the skin and the flesh, bein sheim bemeyaha, or if it's in the stomach, in the intestines, asurim. That's when it comes to animals. Vahanimsoyim bedogim bemeyahem, if it's found in the intestines of the fish, that's asur. In the intestines of the fish is asur. Bein or lebasar, or betocha basar, but let's say you find it in what's called the viscera. You find it either between the skin and the flesh, or actually in the flesh.
The term viscera refers to the internal organs.
I'm sorry. Yes, Dr. J is correcting me that the term viscera refers to the internal parts of the fish. So if you find it over there, that's where it's going to be. That's where it's going to be also. Thank you. So then the Mechaber continues, and he said like this: Bainor lebasar betocha basar mutarim. The parasites, they're in the fish. Elsewhere, not in the innards of the fish, not in the entrails of the fish, but they're actually in the fish meat or in the fish skin. That's mutter. That's all open halacha and shulchan aruch. As maybe unseemly as it sounds, that's a reality, and that's the mechaber says mutter. Okay. And then he goes on to discuss some of the details.
Who's the mechaber again?
The shulchan aruch, Rav Yosef Kairo. So the chachmas adam. Chachmas Adam was the Chai Adam, the same author of Avram Danzig, who ultimately was a relative of the Vilna Gaon. He became a Rav in Vilna. I think he was married to a granddaughter of the Grah, some relation to the Grah. I think he was in Vilna himself at some point. So he writes about this, Taloim hanimtsoim bebehema, bein sheim bein or lebas. So just a side note, when you learn your Adaya, the Chachmas Adam is very good, safer to use, because it gives a nice discussion of the halachos, and also very, it's very clear. So you're good to chazer. As you go through Shulchan Aruch and Shachan, you don't like it? Really?
Tried.
Oh, you tried to use it. Well, you didn't like the style, or you just didn't like the...
Huh? Me and Matt Schneewis learned, and we've become very unclear.
Very unclear, really?
We used it thinking...
What I said? Right? Yeah, it's concise. Well, I'll tell you like this. It's true. Did you use it as a first course, or did you use it after, and as you already done? I'm saying once you learn Shulchan Aruch with the Nosei Kehillah, and then to go, and you still didn't find it helpful? All
right. I mean, I still try to do it.
Okay.
I think he is.
Right.
So, this is interesting.
Okay. Everyone has their own ideas, I guess. So, Taloihun and Soim Bebehim, Bein Shein, Bein Or, Labaso, Bemayayim, Asurim. The behemoth v'shchita talia milsa ve'ilush a gadol b'socha ad shalom nishchad bo me'isar ever menachai v'shchitas behemoth lo mahani. Doesn't help. The shchita for the animal is not going to help to matur that. We only say that by the what? By the ben pakua. Ben pakua, you shecht an animal and you find the calf inside. We say that the shchita for the animal was a shchita for the calf inside and that you could eat. But the shchita on the bug, that's not going to help. Shari Ishlam Chiyas b'fnei atzman has its own existence. We don't say uber yarachima. As far as anything else that is own chiyus, anything that's independent existence, that's totally separate from the cow, that's not going to be matter with the shkita. That's the whole kunst, if you will. That's the chiddush of the uber yarachim over there, that we consider it part of the animal, so that the shkita will help for it as well. We don't say that by sheretz. Ve'eno doma l'shalil, demarbina mikol b'behema tochelu, aval elu b'isirahu kaimu, v'hanimtsoim b'dogim, but what about the ones in the fish? If it's found in the organs, if it's found in the brain of the fish, or in the liver, or in the entrails, asurim, the me'alma asu, because that came from outside. That came from outside. But if they're trapped between the skin and the flesh, that's not called eimer nafai kedogim atzmam. It's like the fish itself. If you find it on the outside of the fish, if you find the worms on the outside of the fish, that's also why, because where'd that come from? That came from outside. came from, let's say, an egg that was deposited by another fish. And that's why it's on the outside of the fish. The ones that are actually in the fish itself, that's mutter. So the OU put out this statement. This is, goes already back to Adar. It goes back to Chavtas Adar. They cite the Gemara in Chulin that we just saw. I'll read it in English. The Gemara in Chulin 67b states that Darna, a worm-like parasite found in the flesh of a fish, is permissible because Mine Gavli. That was the Lashon at the end of the Gemara there. Remember that Lashon of the Gemara? The very end of the Gemara, it said, V'hani ki gavlon beheterik gavlon. I think that's what they're referring to. Mineik gavli. It grows in the fish. The Shulchan Aruch quotes this halacha and adds that worms found in the viscera, in the gut, are prohibited, while worms found in the fish are permitted. Recently, there's been considerable discussion about worms and fish. Again, it's going back a month or so ago. Some Rabbanim understand the halacha as formulated in the Shulchan Aruch to be that worms which hatch in the fish are permitted. Right, the worms that hatch in the fish from the eggs that are in the fish, that's mutter. While worms that are swallowed whole and enter the viscera are prohibited. Both of the worms migrate to the flesh. Ultimately, both the ones that come in and the ones that are hatched there, that's the way they work. For whatever reason, they embed themselves in the flesh of the fish. Based on this understanding, these Rabbanim have stated that today, worms in fish are prohibited. And that's it. Okay, this is because scientists maintain that contemporary worms known as Anisakis enter the flesh through the viscera and then migrate to the flesh. They come from the intestines, and that's science. That's a scientific discussion. This is not a new issue. And this is true, this is not a new issue. The same type of thing comes up every 100 years or so. Same type of thing. You had this recently with chickens. A couple of years back, there was a whole big tumult about certain type of chickens that we eat, called leghorn chickens. All of a sudden, people say, hey, the leghorn chicken is a dorais. It's a bird of prey. Why? Because they saw that the way the leghorn chicken perched, it perched like a dorais. So, again, this was not a new issue. This was something that was discussed, you know, previous generation. What's the issue with the leghorn chicken? Depending upon whether it's calm or agitated, it perches differently. When it's calm, it perches like a kosher bird. When it's agitated, it perches a little bit more tensely. It perches like a dorais, like a bird of prey. So I said, look, we'll show you that the bird is not a bird of prey. That's the common white leghorn chickens that many of us eat. So just the same type of thing came up again. You know, and the shaytals, when was, like, I don't know, like 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it was, that was not a new issue either. You go back 50, 60 years ago, that had been discussed in Chuvas before. But so, you know, people forget, people are not around, all of a sudden you have a new generation of people, they think they discovered a new thing, and everyone wants to, you know, have them make their, machem tayr. Right. So he says this is not a new issue. It's been discussed repeatedly in recent years. The OU has reviewed the matter and found it not to be an issue. Then the editor writes the following. He says, Rabelsky confirmed unequivocally. Rabelsky is one of the three poskim for the OU. Rabelsky, Rabbi Shachter, and Rabbi Ganak are the three poskim for the OU's Kashrus division. Rabelsky confirmed that unequivocally, the OU policy remains that there is no checking necessary, no prohibition of the worms found in wild salmon or other fish. That was the big thing, is the difference between, some are saying, the difference between wild salmon and farmed salmon. Again, I don't eat fish, so I can't tell you, but I'm guessing everyone is familiar with the difference between different types of salmon, the way they're raised, in accordance with the Shulchan Aruch, for the following reasons. Shulchan Aruch does not limit the permissibility of toloim found in the flesh of the fish to any species of tolos. Just says toloim. Doesn't say this tolos, this, any of these toloim. That's one. The halacha states that a tolos found in the flesh of the fish is mutter because of the rule of minei gavloi, which we mentioned, the parasite is found in the flesh of the fish because it grew bigger in the fish. It generates inside the fish. Belsky cited the Rashi in the Gemara as using the term gavul to mean that it became bigger. It grew. Gibel, very often is in Shabbos, though, a gibel when you mix liquid and a solid, and you do lisha, you make a sort of like a gelatinous mix, that's called gibel. But the mass gets bigger as you do. I don't know if it's the same shosh or not. As he understood this to mean, even if the worm originated and was visible to the naked eye outside the fish, this is a big chiddush. This is probably his biggest chiddush in this setting. That is a fit. If the worm was visible outside the fish, it would still be permitted if when it got into the fish, it grew in the fish. If it had an existence inside the fish and it grew in the fish, in the flesh. And once it was secreted in the flesh of the fish.
And the inside part would be...
Exactly, that whole thing would be mutter, because its growth was in the flesh of the fish, even though it came from outside.
Now, what if something still is on the outside?
No, that would not be good.
Now, the outside part you couldn't eat.
That would not be good.
But the inside part you could eat.
Yeah. No, it's still part of the same. What do you mean? It's poking through?
Yes.
I don't know. That's like the joke, you know, what's worse than finding half a worm in an apple? I mean, a whole worm in an apple or half a worm in an apple? I don't know. But Ravelsky said there's no reason to believe that the toloim that are present today are different from the toloim discussed in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. And he said this reason alone was enough to matir the worms, but he said that there were other reasons to permit them. And he said that it's irrelevant if they entered the viscera or from some other way, whether it happened when the fish was alive or when it's dead. And he brings a riot to this. He says that the toloim, which come after death of the fish, the Shulchan Aruch, which we didn't continue to read, says that even the worms that come after the fish is dead are also mutter if they're found in the viscera. If they're found in the flesh. So Rabelsky felt that these toloim must have come from the viscera because there was no other reasonable source of toloim entering a fish after death and are permitted. So he wanted to say that the fish, when the fish dies, the worms from the fish's insides are the fish are going into its... maybe that's similar to what you were describing before, that the eggs were really there, and when it dies, it's going and actually partaking of the animal itself. It's going out of the intestines and feeding on the rest of the body. Anyway, he goes on here. I'm just going to end with the last Nakuda here, but he says that Rabelsky confirmed the size of the halos when swallowed by the fish is not relevant. It doesn't matter when it goes into the mouth, and then it goes into the flesh. Doesn't matter how big it is. He said that the talos is typically 5 millimeters. What people were saying, he said that's an exaggeration. So that's what you're reading now today. So that's, he thinks it's an exaggeration of the larger end of the spectrum. And he says that all these taloim, when they're small, are between 1 and 2 millimeters long and are very thin. And he says that would almost rise to the level of not near lay nine. Because with all this, he says when the fish are taking them in, even if you want to say that that's not true, he feels it is true, this chiddush of growing inside, right? That it's mutter. He wants to say that when the fish takes it in, it's so tiny that it would almost be not nearly nine at that point. So mimonafshach, it would be mutter. And at that time, it was nothing. So where is it now? It's growing inside the fish. All this to say that the OU...
So that's the important thing. Not how small it was coming in. But...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's he's adding that. If you'll tell me that this chiddush is not true, right? That an animal swallows a fish that was a worm before, and then it secretes itself in the meat of the fish, and it grows there. Maybe you'll tell me that that's not what the Mechaber means, or not what the Gemara means, even though he says it is what it means. So I'll tell you more than that, that when a fish swallows those worms, they're so tiny that they're nothing then.
Well, who cares about that?
Because now
how big are they now?
Yeah, but he's saying since when it swallowed it was nothing, when did it become a worm? It became a worm inside the fish.
Yeah.
That's his point. He's saying, halachically, even though it came from outside, it was nothing when it came from outside. It would be l'mashal if I took a drink of water, and then I had this parasite that grew inside my body. Right? So when I swallowed, it was nothing. Now I have a parasite inside me. Where did it come from? It came from inside. That's all he said. You don't follow that?
No. I mean, you're eating the fish.
Right.
So that's what counts.
The question is now, can I eat it with this worm in it, though? Can I eat it with the worm?
So who cares how big it was coming in or going out? The point is, how big is it in the fish? That's it. What's
the one worm? But what he's trying to say is that if you'll tell me that this is the type of worm that I can't eat because of where it is in the fish, right? Where it lives in the fish and how that it came from outside, I'll tell you that it only came from outside as nothing. It became a worm inside the fish. Because if it came from outside... as something, maybe you'll tell me that I'm not allowed to eat a parasite from outside. I'm only allowed to eat the parasites that grow in the fish.
How small it was coming in has to
because let's say the fish swallows a parasite. Let's say the fish swallows a parasite. Now that's a whole long big parasite. That's a substance. So that's not permissible because it's only the ones that are inside the fish, not the ones that are coming from outside the fish. That's coming from outside. That's like the ones that are in the other parts of the body of the fish. It's only the ones that are in the flesh that are okay. Oh, this one, he swallowed it when it's nothing, so where'd it come from? It came from inside. He says you don't really need that anyway. I mean, that's just the, you know, sort of a cherry on the top. In any event, that's the, you know, the basic issue over here. So, again, I'm not here to call into question the opinions of other cashless organizations, but you should just know that this is what they're arguing over. The OU is saying that these worms are... they're the same worms that we discussed, you know, for the last couple of hundred years, going back to the time of the Talmud and the Shulchan Aruch and the Poskim and Chachmas Adam and others discuss it. And it's not like the worms that you find discussed elsewhere, which are problematic. I mean, worms that are in bodies of water is another recent talk with the water, and you know, going back a few years, New York City water. So that's discussed. Avni Nezer has a tshuva about water worms in wells. Those are different issues. But water, the ones in the fish, post-game are saying, nothing new. And like anything else, we have to look at the halacha. What's the halacha? The halacha is that it's mutter. It's mutter. So how do you know what the halacha is?
There some aspect of when it's cooked that the,
no, nothing to
the
that.
Thing like...
Over here? By the water, they want to say that it might be that some of those things break up when you cook the water. The parasites in the water might break up. Yeah, when you boil.
No, I mean, but in the fish? In an animal, whether it be an so. Animal or a fish.
No, the only time where that would make a difference is, for example, a berry is not bottle, right? An entity, a full creature, is not bottle. An ant, let's say an ant falls in my chon, and I know it's a whole ant.
Yeah.
It's not going to be bottle. The whole chon is going to have to go in the garbage, right? Because I have a full ant in there. So let's say I only realized that the ant fell in after the whole thing got all churned together, and I know the ant's not whole anymore. Or a better example, I have a fruit, and I didn't check the fruit for bugs yet, and I put them aside to check, and all of a sudden I come back and someone pureed them. Right now I've pureed bugs. So I know there's bugs in there, but now the bugs are bottled because the volume of the bugs is much less than the volume of all this pureed fruit. Ah, there's bugs in there, but they're not whole bugs. So now you don't have bugs, you have bug fragments. Bug fragments are not treated the same way. So sometimes when you cook something, you'll have the benefit of that, you know, that it breaks up. But it won't make it mutter automatically. It doesn't become permissible because it's cooked. It becomes permissible because the volume now is an issue, as opposed to before, where volume wouldn't have helped. Yeah? If you have so a lot of those yogurts, they say that there's a difference between the yogurts with the fruit on the bottom and the fruit that's pureed throughout. Fruit on the bottom, if it's a type of fruit that's really infested with bugs, and again, that's a Messias question, I'm not here to, you know, say yes or no. Depending upon what the fruit is, if it's one that's infested and it wasn't checked, then you have an issue. But if it's pureed, again, it's maybe uncomfortable as we are to hear that, you don't have that problem. Right? No one's taking all your apples before they make apple juice and applesauce and checking for all the bugs. That stuff is all going into a mixer and it's being cooked and being juiced and being processed. Ah, what about all the bugs? Why isn't that another problem? What's the other problem? I'm not allowed to take a bug intentionally and mash it into my chalent. So that's true. That's where I want the bug to be in my chalent, right? Where I want to be mavatla for that purpose. But let's say I'm doing it for another reason. Well, let's say, this is commonly done. They take gelatin and they'll put it in apple juice to collect the sediment. You want to clear the apple juice. You don't want to get apple juice with bits in your apple juice. You want clear apple juice. So what they do is they take the big vat of apple juice and they throw in pieces of gelatin, and the protein apparently attracts the sediment. Right? That's just the way it works. That's the science. Then they take out the gelatin with all the sediment attached to it. But what happens? Inevitably, some of it's left behind. It's bottled. Why don't we say, batlan isla chachila? No, that's not called name batlan isla chachila. Because really, I don't want it there. I'm not putting it in there so it should be there. It's there for another reason. Same thing, when I shred up the fruit, I'm not shredding up the fruit because I want bugs in there. I'm shredding up the fruit because that's the way I want to process it. So, you know, that you have those issues in kashrus all the time with you know, processed fruits. Okay, anyway, enjoy the fish, the shamus, and we'll get to Shem next week. We'll pick up another issue.